Here's the editor of Lenswork Publishing, Brooks Jensen.
I've been a presenter at two different events in the last 10 days, and interestingly enough, in both events, I was asked about my camera. Maybe that's normal. Maybe I should expect that kind of question. But I always think people are going to ask me about my pictures. And sometimes they do. But more often than not, I'm surprised that people are so curious about the gear. And that fascinates me because I'm not a gear-centric guy, and of course this isn't a gear-centric podcast. But the truth is, we do need to use gear. We use gear every time we're out photographing. We can't get away from it. It's a part of our photographic life. And the truth is, the right gear makes the task a lot easier, and the wrong gear can make something easy become a barrier to what we want to photograph. I've always liked Hugh Brownstone's take on gear, which is he doesn't want it to get in the way between him and the image he wants to make. The camera with the least interruption, the least interference, the least demands on our attention is the virtuous camera. I think he's right about that. But I'm kind of motivated to consider gear for a few minutes just because I've had it come up as questions in these last couple of presentations that I've made. And let me begin by asking the fundamental question for my philosophy about gear, and that is, when you look at a terrific photograph, do you need to know what camera was used? Do you ever know what camera was used? We might speculate what camera Dorothea Lange used when she made Migrant Mother, because she probably used the cameras of her generation, but we don't know the specifics about what lens or precisely what camera she used, and we don't need to know that in order to enjoy Migrant Mother. Or the same can be said about Pepper Number 30 or any of the other great photographs you want to pick from history. We just don't need to know. And we don't most of the time. So in one sense, cameras are a lot more important to you and I, to photographers, because we have to interface with them. But beyond the production of our photographs, we really don't need to know anything about the equipment used. Do you know what brand of typewriter Hemingway used when he pecked out his various novels? No. And would it change your opinion about his novels if you did know? Of course not. So in the cosmic scale of things, way out of proportion to how it's discussed in photographic circles, I just don't think cameras are that important. And probably, you can make terrific images with whatever camera you happen to have, and wherever you happen to be. The trick is knowing how to get the most out of the gear that you have. But having said that, I think it's significant that I was asked about my camera, singular. Nobody ever asks my cameras, plural. It's as though there's one camera that will fit every need, every objective, every kind of image. But that's just not true. Different cameras have different strengths and weaknesses, and it's our job to know the strengths and weaknesses and to use the right camera at the right time. So most serious photographers that I know have more than one camera. Now be careful there, that's a trick comment, because if you have more than one camera, that doesn't make you a serious photographer. All I'm saying is that most serious photographers need to probably do a little reverse engineering so that they end up using the camera that fits the task at hand. There is this sort of myth in the camera manufacturing and camera marketing that one camera could provide the solution to every kind of photography you want to do, and that one camera will fit all needs, even the ones you can't currently predict or know about. But that's not likely to be the case. I learned this in a most unusual way, I think. I had avoided for decades, I had avoided going to the desert southwest to photograph because everybody goes to the desert southwest to photograph, and I didn't want to go there and just make pictures that were everybody else's pictures. But I got talked into going to the desert southwest, and what the heck, why not? Maybe there's something there. And before that trip, I called a very good friend of mine who has been to Capitol Reef numerous occasions and made photographs there. And I called him up and said, what am I likely to find? What is there that I should anticipate? And he said, you know, Capitol Reef is a very difficult place to photograph. He said, I've been going there for 30 years, and I think I only have one or maybe two good photographs from Capitol Reef. It's just a very complex place to photograph. His response gave me some concern about whether or not I was going to be wasting my time. But I decided to go anyway, and when I got down there, I just saw photographs everywhere. I mean, I couldn't shoot fast enough because the compositions just kept coming at me, right, left, up, down. And then I realized that every photograph I was making, I was using a long telephoto lens and getting details up on those sheer cliffs and the vertical rock walls. That would be an incredibly difficult thing to do with a view camera, which is what my friend uses. And a view camera would require a very long lens to reach up into those details on the rock walls, and an equally long bellows on the camera. Focusing would be complex and difficult. I thought, well, no wonder he had a hard time photographing in Capitol Reef. He had equipment that was fighting him. By sheer luck, I had equipment that fit that subject perfectly, and I was able to photograph successfully all over the canyons because I was using a long telephoto lens on a digital camera. That made me remember Cartier-Bresson, who was an okay photographer. He wasn't a particularly big deal until he got his hands on a 35mm camera, and he taught the rest of the world how to see using that camera. And the legacy he's left behind is, to a large degree, the marriage of his vision, his subject, and the perfect camera to use to capture it. That's the thing. Reverse engineering is what's really required in order to make sure that you've got the right camera and the right gear to do the right job to create the images that you want. Here's another little weird example. I got interested in doing macro photography fairly early on in my career, and I knew nothing about it and didn't have a macro lens, so I thought, well, I better do some research and figure out what the best macro lens would be for the work that I wanted to do. And mostly what I wanted to do was really flat things, not three-dimensional plants or botanicals or those kinds of things that produce lots of soft out-of-focus areas. So I bought this book. I think, as I recall, I don't have the book anymore, but I seem to remember his name was Lester Lefkowitz. I just thought that was a great name. And he was a real technical expert about optics and gear. And his suggestion for doing flat macro work was to use an enlarging lens on your camera, because enlarging lenses are manufactured to work perfectly with flat things like negatives and the photographic paper we project that image onto. They're perfect flat lenses. And furthermore, he suggested the use of a reversing ring so that when you put the enlarging lens on your 35mm camera, the part that would be normally closest to the negative with that lens would be the one that would be closest to your subject. And the part of the enlarging lens where the light exits in normal enlarging would be the part that's closest to your film when you made the exposure. So it was a weird technique to reverse a enlarging lens and put it on a camera. But it worked, and it worked beautifully, and he was right. They were the sharpest pictures I ever got, trying to do flat macro work. Amazing. I never used that lens and camera combination for anything other than that, but for that task, it was absolutely perfect. Match the gear to the results you want. Match the techniques to the results you want. That's the trick when choosing and using gear. Another example that tickles my funny bone is how many people are using these high megapixel cameras, you know, 40 megapixels, 30 megapixels, 80 or 100 megapixels, and then their images end up being posted on Instagram or Facebook. It seems just ridiculous. to use such a high-powered camera and an exacting lens to make images that people are going to view on their phone? Doesn't it make more sense that if you're going to exhibit your work on a phone, that a phone is probably all you need to use to take it? Although, come to think about it, phones now have 200 megapixels, so maybe erase that last comment. There are other implications, however, besides the camera and reverse engineering from the images you want. For example, if you do need a high megapixel camera because you need the detail that will be revealed in the landscape, have you considered that you'll also need what I'll characterize as a high-resolution tripod? That is to say, you can't put your high-resolution camera on a flimsy little tripod and expect that it's going to be held still enough to reveal all the detail that's possible in that lens and camera combination. So a bigger, beefier, stronger, more stable tripod will be necessary in order to use that high megapixel camera to its best use. The same could be said about the filters that you use, and even the way you go about processing your images needs to be reverse engineered from the result you want to create. I like Ted Orland's advice. He told me this years and years ago when I was a young photographer, which was essentially KISS, keep it simple. His thinking was to always use the least camera that you need in order to get the job done. Anything that the camera does beyond what you need is either going to get in the way or is an unnecessary expense or adds unnecessary weight to what you have to haul around. So thinking in terms of the least camera can be a very useful thing. I like to add to his KISS, KIF, keep it fun. Because the more complicated the camera is, the more difficult it's going to be to use, the more menus you're going to have to negotiate in order to get the camera to perform like you want it to. And all that fussing can be, for some people, a lot of fun, but for others it can be a reason to give up photography because it's just too complicated. I'll add one more little acronym just because I love acronyms. KITWYAN, Kitwyan. Which stands for keep it to what you actually need. If you do that, you'll probably be a lot happier in your photography because you'll have success that's commensurate with an effort that you put into it and won't rely on some feature of a camera which you may or may not have. Beware of what I characterize as someday marketing, which the manufacturers use all the time. Someday you might want to do this. Someday you might be in a situation where you need this piece of gear. Someday is always a postponement of what you can and will do today. And someday marketing relies on the fact that you always want to be prepared for the unknown. Well, being prepared is probably not a bad idea. But think of what it requires to purchase equipment, carry equipment, maintain equipment, etc., that you use only once in a blue moon. Do you really need those images? Well, if you do, then maybe that someday lens or someday camera might make sense. But more likely, you'll find greater success by mastering the equipment that you already have and already use. So when it comes to choosing your camera, I guess my advice is don't choose your camera based on what you think it might do or even what it can do. Choose your camera on what you need based on the images you want to make. And what you may very well find out is that the question, what camera should I have, becomes what cameras should I have, because you may have more than one interest in photography and more than one kind of image you actually want to make.
Copyright 2025, Lenswork Publishing.